I was trying to get on, and then I opened a page, and guess what? I opened something that somebody was playing a show off, so I'm sorry, I didn't know that. They were playing some music, and I killed their show, so I'm very sorry about that. So, welcome to everybody. This is Marco. You are listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9. Somehow the recording level is not very high. So anyway, welcome back. It's beautiful weather. And that means we are tilting towards the we're tilting more towards the sun. So our northern hemisphere now is getting warmer. So I'm going to put on an intro. And after the intro comes on, I'll be right back. So this is Marco. You are listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9. Oh, just wait, I'll put it on first. There we go. It's not agreeing with me. None of this equipment is agreeing with me today, so I don't know why. Okay, there it goes. In front of Gucci in the winter, I see you with your girl. Sporting, in your chinchilla fur. I was laid up in the coupe back shader. Looking at your face just pure with no makeup. A little bit of MAC lip gloss. Hair in a bun, well done. Looking for a ring, I see none. So I hopped out the coupe and hot the soup is stopping. Introduced like I'm shining. You my destiny. In your diamond cluster, too much just to touch you. Perfume down to your structure. Think I wait till a second. This is Robin, the program manager at CITR 101.9 FM. You're listening to AstroTalk with Marco, the best astronomy program on the planet. Put it in your purse and call. On the telephone, she heard my voice. Tell me to pick her up in my Rolls Royce. If my Rolls Royce is not for ladies, then girl, I'm gonna take you in my Mercedes. If my Mercedes would have full up of the disease, then girl, I'm gonna take you in my Firebird. If my Firebird cannot take the curve, girl, put your ass on the dumb at your butt.
You're getting closer. My player days is over. Well, maybe not completely, but still in all. Come here, let's see your head on my bed. And let me get between your legs. Lay on your back. Take it from the back. Like a bag.
And we all love anniversaries, don't we? There's the 50th anniversary of the Apollo moon landing. That will come on July 20th, so that's coming soon. But one of the best university our anniversaries, one of the funnest universities is to do with Snoopy. So 50 years ago, Charlie Brown and Snoopy were in lunar orbit. So I'm going to read this article from NASA.gov. It says, 50 years ago, Charlie Brown and Snoopy in lunar orbit. It's dated May 21st, 2019. Following a trouble-free three-day journey from Earth, Apollo 10 slipped behind the moon and communications with mission control was temporarily cut off. The Lunar Orbit Insertion Maneuver, LOI, a six-minute firing of the Service Propulsion System, SPS engine, took place behind the moon. Only the crew, Commander Thomas P. Stafford, Lunar Module Pilot Eugene A. Cernan, and Command Module Pilot John W. Young, at first knew that the burn was completely successful, placing Apollo 10 into an elliptical 69 by 169 mile orbit around the moon. As Apollo 10 recorded the backside of the moon and communications were restored, Stafford radioed to Mission Control, "You can tell the world that we have arrived." So they arrived. Almost immediately, all three crew members began excitedly describing the lunar scenery passing by beneath them, with Cernan summing it up best. Quote, "It might sound corny, but the view is really out of this world," end quote, as they crossed the Terminator. So the Terminator is the line that divides the sun from the darkness. So we have a Terminator on Earth. And when you watch the moon, you look at its Terminator. And that's where the brightest, the best viewing of the moon, you can see the best craters. As they crossed the Terminator into the night side of the moon, they were surprised by how many features they could still see, lighted by Earthshine, with Young exclaiming, "Boy, this moon is lit up like a Christmas tree on the dark side. It is well illuminated from the Earth," end quote. So I'm talking about the 50th anniversary of Apollo 10 going behind the moon. After two revolutions around the moon, to verify their trajectory, the Apollo 10 astronauts once again fired the SPS engine, behind the moon, this time for 14 seconds. So I'm going to say something here. I'm going to go away from the article. I think when astronauts go to the moon, or sorry, Mars, so they're going to go to Mars. So let's look at the experience of going to the moon. Apollo 10 circled the moon, but it didn't land on the moon. And Apollo 11 finally landed on the moon. And astronauts got out, jumped on the moon, and there we go. I think it was Neil Armstrong. So what's going to happen now, astronauts will probably, when NASA finally gets to Mars, I believe astronauts will fly all the way to Mars, circle Mars quite a few times, do some tests maybe, check it out, and that would all be in preparation for the landing on Mars, which would be probably the next mission or two. So I wouldn't be very happy if I had to fly all the way to Mars, I couldn't get out of the capsule and walk on Mars. So that's what's going to happen. They're going to probably fire their engines, go to Mars, circle Mars, and take pictures, do tests, probably look at the best landing sites, like a lot of NASA missions. And I'll talk about OSIRIS-REx about that later. But that's what they're probably going to do. So this was the first one, Apollo 10 going to the moon, and not landing on the moon, but going to the moon a couple times around it. But they said they were excited. Okay, the quality of the TV broadcast was excellent, with viewers on Earth treated to amazing details of the lunar surface. Shortly after the TV downlink, Cernan opened the hatch to Snoopy. So what's Snoopy? For the first time. And floated inside to partially activate the lunar module, perform a brief inspection, conduct communications checks, and transfer equipment that will be needed later when Snoopy flew free from Charlie Brown. So I guess they called one of their modules, one of their spacecraft Snoopy, and one of them Charlie Brown. Meanwhile, inside Charlie Brown, Stafford and Young were performing some landmark tracking activities, identifying and photographing targets on the lunar surface. After returning to Charlie Brown, Cernan reported on Snoopy's condition, quote, "I'm personally very happy with the fellow," end quote. The crew prepared to settle down for the first night's sleep in lunar orbit, with Cernan asking the ground to, quote, "watch Snoopy well tonight and make him sleep good, and we'll take him out for a walk and let him stretch his legs this morning," end quote. So they're not telling us who Snoopy was and who Charlie Brown was. Let's see this. I guess quite a few people remember that, because I took pictures on TV. I was so excited. The crew awoke early to begin their busiest day of the mission, an 8-hour sequence of maneuvers in lunar orbit to simulate all operations except the landing itself. So I guess they're going to go, when they finally do go to Mars, as I suspect, I'm not sure, I don't work in NASA and I'm not a genius scientist, but they're probably going to send a spacecraft up there, and they're going to circle around Mars quite a bit, do tests just like here. They're simulate all operations except the landing itself. So that's what they'll probably do, simulate operations, see what the atmosphere is like, and see how the crew, and I suppose a lot of knowledge will be gleaned in terms of how does space affect astronauts in such a long flight, and how can they survive? Like, they'll have to grow their own food, not live off the land, because they're going to have to somehow eat for probably a year and a half. It'd be probably 6 months to get there, probably 6 months to get back, and they're going to fly it so it's the optimum time. So if Mars is on the other side, they're not going to do that. They're not going to fly there. They're going to fly when it's closest. And so it'll probably be a year and a half mission. Imagine that, eating and growing your own food for a year and a half, and there's no water. So basically, the reality is they're going to have to, I've seen this before, where they get their urine, filter it out, and then that filtered urine, they're going to water plants with it. And then the water that comes off the plants later, I believe that's what they're going to capture to drink. So imagine what that does to a person, that they're going to have to drink stuff like that. Whew. So there's lots of things they're going to have to test. And as we know, how long does it take to get to the moon? A couple of days, probably. And Mars is much farther, so it's going to be a long flight. But they're going to have a lot of really good technology. Okay, so let's keep reading about Snoopy. So the crew awoke early to begin their busiest day of the mission, an 8-hour sequence of maneuvers in lunar orbit to simulate all operations except the landing itself. All three crew members donned their pressure suits. Stafford and Cernan transferred to Snoopy, leaving Young and Charlie Brown, and then they closed the hatches between the two spacecraft. As they prepared to undock Snoopy from Charlie Brown, they couldn't vent the docking tunnel connecting the two spacecraft. Although the crew believed that some insulation was clogging the vent valve, engineers later discovered that an incorrect fitting had been installed on the valve, preventing air from escaping into space. So, see, they ran into a little snafu there, and imagine how much training the astronauts have to have in order to try to fix these things. If something happens, like a malfunction, they're going to have to, they're in contact with mission control, I guess, but they're going to have to do a lot of the repairs themselves. So mission control called up a procedure to circumvent the problem, but then the crew noticed that Snoopy and Charlie Brown were out of alignment by 3.5 degrees. Mission control assured them that as long as the slippage didn't exceed 6 degrees, it was safe to undock. So I'm going to stop with the article here now, comment on something we know all too well. We know what happened to Hubble. When Hubble went up, everybody was so excited. They were looking forward. There was such anticipation. And some procedure was done incorrectly, so something was out of whack. And the pictures were dreadful. It didn't focus properly, so the pictures were all fuzzy and not good pictures. So they had to fly astronauts. They had the space shuttle. They had to go up to Hubble and repair it, and it worked. But that's not going to happen here because we're going to go to Mars. And Mars, you know what, on the break, I don't want to mess around here, but I'm going to see the distance from Earth to Mars. Maybe I'll type it in now. Earth to Mars. So distance from Earth to Mars in miles is about 33.9 million miles. And I think distance from Earth to the Moon is about, is it 250,000 miles? So the distance to Mars is about 125 times farther. So let's just say 34,000 miles compared to 250,000 miles. So that's a lot. There's like about 120 times different. So here there's a thing. It says, how many years does it get to Mars? Here it says the journey from Earth to Mars takes about 300 days. Every 2 years, Mars is at its closest point, only 55 million kilometers from Earth, which is 33 million miles. And it's the ideal time to send a spacecraft. Travel time depends on the position of the planets and how much fuel you're willing to burn. So here it says, how long did it take to get to Mars in 2018? The fastest spacecraft launched from Earth was NASA's New Horizon mission, which visited Pluto in 2015. In January 2006, the probe left Earth at 36,000 miles per hour, or 58,000 kilometers per hour. If such a probe traveled in a straight line to Mars, the time it would take to get to Mars would be, closest approach, 942 hours, which is 39 days. So I have a book on Mars about many years ago. It could have been 15 or 20 years ago. So it's really not it's not the latest, it's not in date, and what it showed was a 6 month or maybe longer approach to Mars for the time. And what it showed is the spacecraft would make like a circular orbit getting out to Mars, not on a straight line. So what I think is, and this makes sense, is that if the spacecraft goes on a straight beeline to Mars, it's going to fight the gravity of the sun. It's going to need a lot of fuel. So here's a question on the internet. Says, can we get to Mars right now? According to Sky and Telescope, Mars will be directly opposite from the sun seen from Earth and will be at its brightest, but it doesn't tell you the day. Okay. So basically, what is the closest planet to Earth? That is, although Venus is the planet that comes closest to Earth in the sweet spot in its orbit, Mercury stays the closest to Earth the longest, according to a commentary published Tuesday, March 12th in the magazine Physics. Okay, so there's lots of things to consider when going to Mars. And would I want to go to Mars? Maybe not. A few minutes before, now this is back to the Apollo 10 thing. A few minutes before the spacecraft disappeared behind the moon, Mission Control gave Snoopy the go for DOI, the Descent Orbit Insertion, the berm of the LM's Descent Propulsion System, DPS engine, to lower its orbit's low point to about 50,000 feet. As with most critical maneuvers of the mission, this one took place behind the moon, so the low point would be reached on the near side near the Apollo 11 landing site area in the Sea of Tranquility. The 27-second burn began with the engine at 11.3% thrust for the first 15 seconds, then Stafford throttled it up to 40% thrust for the remainder of the maneuver. Stafford and Cernan began taking photographs and film of the surface as they started their descent to what was later calculated to be about 47,000 feet. So what I believe is Stafford and Cernan were the first humans to see the other side of the moon, and we call it the dark side of the moon, but it's not dark. It's because that side never faces us, so we call it the dark side. So I can imagine doing this, going down to the moon and landing on the moon. Just makes me recall something about one of the Mars landers, and the engineer called it 7 minutes of hell, because it takes 7 minutes to either reverse the engines or burn down or to slow down the spacecraft. And I think what they do is they lose contact with the spacecraft. So when going to Mars, I guess they have to get an orbit around Mars, and they're going to be traveling much faster because Mars is very far away, whereas the moon wasn't as far, so didn't have to go as fast. And to get into orbit, it would be 7 minutes of no contact, of darkness, but it's just a different ball game in terms of Mars. I don't know about it, but I could just imagine how much more complicated it would be. It's very far away, so the astronauts are on their own. They got to feed themselves, and just with the regular trips to Mars with the orbiters and all the other spacecraft that have gone to Mars, as I said, it's 7 minutes of hell entering Mars's atmosphere. So then they got to land safely, and they have, I remember there's all these kinds of balloons and parachutes and everything. So when the first trip to Mars, it's probably going to be 10 years from now, could be, and astronauts will probably go to Mars but not walk on Mars. So here, 50 years ago, Charlie and Snoopy were in lunar orbit around Mars, around the moon. So one of the spacecrafts were called Snoopy, one was called Charlie Brown, and I believe Snoopy was the spacecraft that was going to go down to the lunar surface. And here you have a nice picture of it. So if anybody's interested in this, it is www.nasa.gov, and it's dated May 21st, 2019. Under Apollo 10, it said 50 years ago, Charlie Brown and Snoopy in lunar orbit. So they prepared for the Apollo 11 orbit, or the Apollo 11 mission, by sending Apollo 10 up there. And here it shows a picture. Left, Charlie Brown from Snoopy shortly after undocking. So one of the spacecraft, Snoopy took a picture of Charlie Brown. So one of the spacecraft was called Charlie Brown, one was called Snoopy, and I believe Snoopy from Charlie Brown during the inspection. So one of the spacecraft undocked from the orbiter that would be up there, and in Apollo 11, they actually did it. They undocked and they landed on the moon, where one astronaut had to stay in the spacecraft up there. So there's one spacecraft that detaches, goes to the surface. And again, this spacecraft has to have propulsion system to send it back up into orbit so it can dock up with a spacecraft that stayed. So that's going to happen, I guess, on Mars. They're going to do all the tests. They're going to undock in preparation tests. And when they finally do it, imagine that. You're how many astronauts? 3-5 astronauts? You're one or two of the astronauts that are left up in the spacecraft, and the other astronauts get to walk on Mars. And that'll be incredible to be there, but I would, flying all the way there, I would love to walk on Mars. Okay, now here's another picture. Snoopy ascent stage approaching Charlie Brown, and it says, it shows here, Apollo 10 view of the approach to landing site 2, the target for Apollo 11, and another picture, overhead view of the Apollo 11 landing site in the upper portion of the image. So they were scouting landing sites, just like they did with OSIRIS-REx now. They are orbiting the asteroid Bennu, and one day they will get the spacecraft. From all the research they've done, I believe they'll be in orbit for about a year. They've been there for a couple months now. And then they're going to get all this data, the best place to get close to it, extend their arm out, and then touch the surface of the asteroid Bennu, blow some nitrogen gas, I believe, onto the surface, and this will get the regolith flowing up, and they can catch enough, and then they're going to go up in their spacecraft and see if the sample was good, and if it's not good, they'll have to go back down and get more. So this is exciting stuff. So if you think to pause, this has been 50 years. 50 years ago, people walked on the moon, and this will be incredible. And you know what we got to do? We got to get a woman up there. So who will be the first person to walk on Mars? Will it be a woman? Why not? That would be great. And this was the preparation, Apollo 10 for Apollo 11. So what they'll probably do is send a spacecraft up there, scout all these things, do all these tests, and I can just imagine the millions of things they have to take into consideration now on Earth, and then when they go up there, when they finally go to Mars, there's probably a million things more that they'll learn that they have to consider before the spacecraft goes up there and people land on Mars. So to me, this is very exciting stuff, all these anniversaries, and there's another one. NASA and Peanuts celebrate Apollo 10's 50th anniversary. This was May 18th, and they show astronauts touching Snoopy before they're going up there. So thank you for listening. I think all astronomy is quite exciting. To me, it is anyway. I go gaga over astronomy, and now we are doing so many things. I think I talked about the Spitzer Space Telescope. And James Webb will go up there maybe in a few years. And we have Hubble up there and New Star, and we have, what's that called? Chandra X-ray Telescope. And we have the Fermi, it's either a telescope or observatory. And you know what? I don't want to downgrade this, but I apologize. I don't know the name of the European Space Agency telescopes. I think one is the Planck Observatory, and there's quite a few. So they also have a lot of so to me, this is exciting time. Our beloved president of the world, Donald Trump, he said we'll be back on the moon within 4 years. But there's a lot of science going on, a lot of astronomers in here at UBC. So this was a 50th anniversary, and it's too bad that we didn't keep going to the moon, building like a habitation there. Maybe they have, maybe it hasn't been told to us. But we're going back to the moon and Mars, so that's exciting. So thank you for listening. I'm going to go on a break now. When I come back, we'll talk more astronomy. This is Marco. You're listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.9.
5-4 No problem. Yeah. Baby girl, there's something about the way you talk. Baby, come wait for me. I mash up so much that you never come walk. So don't take your time with me. She had a boy like me before.
She says I take a body on the toes. She knows that I'm still that nigga chilling on the block. I'm still that nigga chilling on the block. Yeah. She said there's nothing she will do for me.
Hello, this is Marco, and you're listening to Astro Talk with Stefan Don on CITR
4.9.
Second Wednesday of the month from 6 to 9 is Women in Career Night at the Bike Kitchen. Bring your bike and give it some love in this safe and positive space for anyone who identifies as female or queer. Come learn how to fix your own bike with the help of a female or queer identified mechanic and volunteers. Plus, there's free pizza. Visit bikecoop.ca for more information.
Full force.
This could be one of the big moments in your life. Don't make it your last.
Look, this thing might be bigger than even we think it is.
Do you need an upgrade to the soundtrack to your life? Perhaps a song from a film or a tune from TV? My name is Gap. Exploding Head Movies is here to give you sounds from the cinema, along with the songs that will be defining your future, and those forgotten classics that need a little rescue. Loading Head Movies, Monday, 7 to 9 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
Hi, this is Marco. Welcome back. You're on Astro Talk on CITR 101.9. I love the voice of the guy. That's why I had to play that again. So, we're going to go back to Snoopy. Yes, Snoopy. So, there's a NASA Silver Snoopy Award is given by NASA astronauts to employees and contractors for outstanding achievements related to human spaceflight or mission success. So they're little decals of Snoopy in a spacesuit, and who doesn't love Snoopy? And there's another picture of Snoopy, says astronaut Tom Stafford wearing a Snoopy is being shown a pennant bearing Snoopy. It says all systems are go. So I like how NASA can have fun with these things. So I'm going to read another article about Snoopy just quickly. It's dated May 18th, 2019. NASA and Peanuts celebrate Apollo 10's 50th anniversary. Today, NASA and Peanuts worldwide celebrate the 50th anniversary of the launch of Apollo 10. So that was last Saturday. And a history of their partnership in NASA's Safety and Human Spaceflight Awareness Program. In 2018, NASA and Peanuts have collaborated over the past year, leading to the Apollo 10 anniversary, with STEM activities, a mini documentary, and other new products that share the excitement of science, technology, engineering, and math with the next generation of space explorers. The collaboration, formalized through a Space Act agreement, provides an opportunity to update the Snoopy character by Charles M. Schulz for space-themed programming with contents about NASA's deep space exploration missions 50 years after its initial collaboration during the Apollo era. So there was, Peanuts has also teamed with Apple TV to present a 10-minute feature that includes archival interviews of two of the three Apollo 10 astronauts, Tom Stafford and Eugene Cernan, as well as an interview with current NASA Flight Director Ginger Carrick. So it's exciting because if 50 years from now, what we'll be looking back at, that's what's so interesting about this stuff. We are going to be looking at what we do today, and I'm going to look at something about the moon announcements. So, sorry about that. Announcements. So, this is dated May 20, May 22nd, 2019, NASA Administrator to make Artemis Moon Program Announcement Media Teleconference set. So NASA Administrator Jim Bridenstine will make a significant announcement about the Artemis program's lunar exploration plans at 1 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, Thursday, May 23rd, at the Florida Institute of Technologies. Administrator Bridenstine will announce the commercial partner selection to develop and build the first segment of NASA's Gateway Outpost. So you know how Trudeau came here and he said, I'm going to, for the next, I don't know, 20 years, we're going to build 18 Coast Guard vessels, and that's quite exciting. But NASA's doing it for space. So NASA will also host a media teleconference at 2:45. The teleconference participants include Bill Gerstermeyer, Associate Administrator, NASA's Human Exploration Operations Mission Directorate; Michelle Gates, NASA's Human and Exploration Operations Mission Directorate; Dan Hartman, Gateway Program Manager; and Mike Barrett, a PPE Project Manager, NASA's Glenn Research Center in Cleveland. I don't know what PPE is. The thing will stream live on May 23rd, which is today, isn't it? Yes, it's streamed live today at 1 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, so I missed it, so I'll look into it later. So they're actually going to the moon, which is great. Okay, so let's switch topics about the moon, and now look another thing in our solar system about NASA's Juno finds changes in Jupiter's magnetic field. So they knew something about Jupiter's magnetic field, and they sent spacecrafts there. And I can remember what Trina Ray was telling us about Saturn's magnetic field and other things about Saturn. Even though they were up there for many years, 13 years, exploring Saturn, not until the spacecraft's final dives in between the rings did they learn a lot of other things that, even though the mission was greatly successful, it didn't learn at all. So it had to dive in between the rings and the planet, crash land on the planet, and they learned a lot. So there's still more to learn, which is sometimes befuddling to me. Yeah, befuddling, that's a big word. It's about the biggest word I can use. I thought they knew it all, but they don't. And there's these planets, like I said earlier, Mars is 33.9 million miles away at its closest approach, and it's like 58 million kilometers away. And we have a lot of orbiters up there. I think Mars has been visited by more spacecraft than probably all the other planets combined. So that's how many, I believe there's 12 up there now, either circling the planet or on the planet, and just learning more and more about Mars as time goes on. So we think that we know it all, but there's so many things to learn about Mars even. We've been there a lot. So I'm going to read this article. NASA's Juno finds changes in Jupiter's magnetic field, May 20th, 2019. Now there's a picture. It says, this still from an animation illustrates Jupiter's magnetic field at a single moment in time. Pretty cool. The great blue spot, an invisible to the eye concentration of magnetic field near the equator, stands out as a particularly strong feature. So it shows magnetic field lines here. So I'm going to start reading the article. NASA's Juno mission to Jupiter made the first definitive detection beyond our world of an internal magnetic field that changes over time, a phenomenon called secular variation. Isn't this wonderful? They have all these big complicated words or terms, and they have to give names to them. So I just like that. In the other article I read earlier, they gave the spacecraft the name Snoopy, and another spacecraft was called Charlie Brown. Now, isn't that simple? But here they call it secular variation and all these fancy terms, and you can imagine. Okay, so I think there's one called magnetic recombination. Is that magnetic? I don't know, but there's a lot of terms. Okay, Juno determined the gas giant's secular variation is most likely driven by the planet's deep atmospheric winds. The discovery will help scientists further understand Jupiter's interior structure, including atmosphere dynamics, as well as changes in Earth's magnetic field. A paper on discovery was published today in the journal Nature Astronomy. So I'm sure that would be good light reading for anybody, right? So says Scott Bolton, a Juno principal investigator from the Southwest Research Institute in San Antonio, and quote, secular variation has been on the wish list of planetary scientists for decades. This discovery could only take place due to Juno's extremely accurate science instruments and the unique nature of Juno's orbit, which carries it low over the planet as it travels from pole to pole, end quote. Characterizing the magnetic field of a planet requires close-up measurements. Juno scientists compared data from NASA's past mission to Jupiter, Pioneer 10 and 11, Voyager 1 and Ulysses, to a new model of Jupiter's magnetic field called JRM09. The new model was based on data collected during Juno's first 8 science passes of Jupiter using its magnetometer, an instrument capable of generating a 3D map of the magnetic field. What scientists found is that from the first Jupiter magnetic field data provided by the Pioneer spacecraft through to the latest data provided by Juno, there were small but distinct changes to the field. So here's a photo. But first, let me comment on that. Yeah, I would assume there'd be changes to the field. Is that a measurement thing, or is that discovering something new? But you just naturally assume there'd be changes to the field over time. Now there's a view of Jupiter. It says, this striking view of Jupiter's great red spot and turbulent southern hemisphere was captured by NASA's Juno spacecraft as it performed a close pass of the gas giant planet. So now I'm looking at Jupiter. I think it's like, I don't know if it's the sun or if it's Jupiter, but Jupiter is obviously much bigger than Earth. So I'm thinking, what is the limit on how big a terrestrial rock planet can be? Why do the giant planets have to be gas planets, or do they? That's an interesting question. That's what I think about sometimes. I'm thinking, what's the limit? What's the biggest size you can have on a rocky planet? Could a rocky planet get as big as Jupiter? And all these astronomers, these brilliant people that are looking for exoplanets, I think it's called hot Jupiters or giant Jupiters or whatever, they think they find big planets in other, orbiting other stars, but of course they're gas giants. So how big could a rocky planet get? Could it get as big as Jupiter? I don't know. So says Kimi Moore, a Juno scientist from Harvard University in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and quote, finding something as minute as these changes in something so immense as Jupiter's magnetic field was a challenge. Having a baseline of close-up observations over 4 decades long provided us with just enough data to confirm that Jupiter's magnetic field does change over time, which I guess it's understandable. You know, you think, okay, if someone said to me, Jupiter's magnetic field changes over time, that wouldn't be too drastic a statement. Why not? Yes, sure. Okay, so here we have a gas giant. They're studying the magnetic field. Once the Juno team proved secular variation did occur, so I'm trying to think, what is secular variation? Does that mean changes in the magnetic field? Let me look back. The first definitive detection beyond our world of an internal magnetic field that changes over time, a phenomenon called secular variation. So when the magnetic field changes over time, this is called secular variation. And I believe that neutron stars, their magnetic fields do change over time. They dissipate and they peter out to nothing, at least that's what I thought, over long periods of time. So if someone would say to me, guess what, magnetic fields change. Yeah, okay. That's not a earth-shattering statement? Sure, why not? Once the Juno team proved secular variation did occur, they sought to explain how such a change might come about. The operation of Juno's atmospheric or zonal winds best explain the changes in its magnetic field. So here they're looking at Jupiter's atmosphere and the winds in them to explain the changes in its magnetic field. These winds extend from the planet's surface to over 1,860 miles, Earth 3,000 kilometers deep, where the planet's interior begins changing from gas to highly conductive liquid metal. They are believed to shear the magnetic field, stretching them and carrying them around the planet. Such complicated stuff. I don't know how I could figure this out, but these people seem to figure it out. So when we're looking at storms, you know, you look at the, or listening to the TV yesterday, listening to a Seattle station, they talked about the storms in Missouri. So I think their capital city, I forget what its name is. And also St. Louis was bracing for storms. And I believe on Neptune, the winds could travel a thousand or thousands of miles an hour. Here, we get all freaked out about 100 or 200. I don't know if winds here can travel 200 miles an hour, but the winds and the storm on these big gas giants and other planets are incredible and something we have to take into account. So what happens on Mars when there's a dust storm? They lose one of their rovers because all the dust blows around. It covers the rover's solar panel. The solar panel can't get the sun, bang, it's dead. So imagine the dust storms if we have to go to Mars or habitate Mars. I'm sure that's one of the things that these astronauts and these astronomers definitely know about. So they shear the magnetic fields on Jupiter's atmosphere, stretching them and carrying them around the planet. Nowhere was Jupiter's secular variation as large as the planet's great blue spot. They have a blue spot, An intense patch of magnetic field near Jupiter's equator. The combination of the great blue spot with its strong localized magnetic fields and strong zonal winds at this latitude result in the largest secular variations in the field on the Jovian world. So says Kimi Moore, so that's K-I-M-E-E, and quote, "It is incredible that one narrow magnetic hotspot, the great blue spot, could be responsible for almost all of Jupiter's secular variation, but the numbers bear it out. With this new understanding of magnetic fields, during future science passes, we will be able to create a planet-wide map of Jupiter's secular variation. It may also have applications for scientists studying Earth's magnetic field, which still contains mysteries to be solved," end quote. Okay, so this is all about Jupiter's magnetic field, and they found variations. And I think now they're talking about a blue spot. I don't think it is, yeah, it says here, "An invisible to the eye concentration of magnetic field near the equator stands out as a particularly strong feature." So they can't see it with the eye, but when they make magnetic, somehow an animation from a still illustrates Jupiter's magnetic field, so then they can see a blue spot, and that's Jupiter's magnetic field. And we're so excited because guess what? We found out more about Jupiter's magnetic field. So you know, there's so much to find out about astronomy, and as they say, then they are still in a lot of these discoveries in their infancy. And also what happens is, for example, when Voyager goes into interstellar space, so the two Voyagers have gone into interstellar space, so astronomers have created models thinking, saying, okay, I think interstellar space is going to be like this, and when they get there, wow, it is. So their models, and they're studying something that's so far away you can't believe it. But still, even though I'm amazed at all this discovering these models, just like with Jupiter's magnetic field, there is so much left to learn about. Okay, so this is Marco. I'm going to go on a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk more about the anniversaries of going to the moon. So 50th anniversaries just came, one of them. Another one's going to come soon. This is Marco. You're listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.9.
The UBC Women in Science Club provides support for female undergraduates in science fields. Our club has three pillars: mentorship, building community, and connecting people. We offer networking events with alumni, professional development workshops, as well as an ongoing mentorship program to support students through challenges that arise for women pursuing careers in science.
This is a journey into sound.
Hi, this is DJ Wah, inviting you to join me every second Sunday at 8 p.m. here on 101.9 CITR for Techno Progressivo.
You in my hug now, my life.
This is the house that funk built. This is the house that funk built.
Techno Progressivo is the only radio show in Vancouver where you'll hear the best mix of new tech house, techno, and progressive house.
A body bang. A
So join me every second Sunday at 8 p.m. for Techno Progressivo.
House music. House music.
Featuring a wide range of music from India, including popular music from the 1930s to the present.
Rhythms. India.
Alternating Sundays, 8 to 9 p.m. at CITR 101.9 FM.
Calm, don't start no trouble with me. Trying to keep it peaceful is a struggle for me. I don't wanna die for them to miss me. Yes, I see the things that they wishing on me. Hope I got some brothers that outlive me. They gon' tell the story, shit was different with me. God's plan.
God's plan with my radio God's show plan. Astro Talk on CITR 101.9.
Sometimes I won't, yeah. I feel good, sometimes I don't, like. Yeah. Yeah, I go hard on Southside G, yeah, wait. I make sure that Northside E. And still. Yeah. I've been moving calm, don't start no trouble with me. Trying to keep it peaceful.
You're listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.9 with Drake and Marco at UBC.
You know how I like it when you loving on me. I don't
want
to die for them to miss me.
The Milwaukee people are mad at Drake. He's on the floor. He's touching the coach. He's hounding the opposing players. So will Drake be able to do this more? I don't know. So that was Drake and God's plan. And we're back. And let's see what plan NASA's have. We're going to talk about NASA taps 11 American companies to advance human lunar landers. So that'll be interesting stuff with all this new technology. And I really don't know why they stopped going to the moon. It's going to be exciting going back, and we can build a human habitation on the moon, and a woman can walk on the moon. Oh, I wanted to talk about the Women in Science Club. That was a great club. And if you go to my website, www.marcosastrotalk.com, haven't updated it lately. my subscription to the podcast probably ran out, but I have a Women in Science section, so listen to my website, www.marcosastrotalk.com. So now we're going to go, I blew that one, so I'll say it again, www.marcosastrotalk.com. As I said, I have a Women's in Science section, and there's a lot of good great pioneers, and I talked to Trina Ray from NASA twice. She's very kind, and so is Dr. Stairs here. She studies neutron stars, and they were the kindest, easiest to talk to. And sometimes when you're dealing with NASA people, it's tough, because guess what? they're doing really groundbreaking research. They're like doing all this interesting stuff, and all of a sudden along comes a person, says, "Hi, I'm Marco, can I interview?" Well, they don't have time for that, do they? So Dr. Stairs was great, and so was Trina Ray, but all the others, like Dr. Matthews, thank you, and I forget from Triumph, I forget his name, oh, it's Italian name, but it'll come back. But Chris Ruiz comes back, and Dr. Krukin, and what's the guy, I'm sorry, anyway, I'm sorry, I'll bring up your name later. So I'm going to read an article, May 16, 2019, on www.nasa.gov. It says, NASA taps 11 American companies to advance human lunar landers. So imagine America, a technological giant. As I said, when I was in the 1980s, I wanted to live in Los Angeles. And at that time, there was the greatest concentration of scientists in the world in the 80s. Was in Los Angeles for the military companies. So lots of places all over America for conducting space business. So I'm going to read this article. I'm going to say the name of the article again. NASA taps 11 American companies to advance lunar human landers, May 16, 2019. NASA has selected 11 companies to conduct studies and produce prototypes of human landers for its Artemis Lunar Exploration Program. The effort will help put American astronauts, the first woman and next man on the moon's south pole by 2024, and establish sustainable missions by 2028, which sounds wonderful. And the first woman, isn't that great? So says Marshall Smith, the director for Human Lunar Exploration Program at NASA's headquarters, and quote, "To accelerate our return to the moon, we are challenging our traditional ways of doing business. We will streamline everything from procurement to partnerships to hardware development and even operations. Our team is excited to get back to the moon quickly as possible, and our public-private partnerships to study human landing systems are an important next step in that process." End quote. Through Next Space Technologies for Exploration Partnerships, so this is Next Step, Appendix E Contracts, the selected companies will study and or develop prototypes during the next 6 months that reduce a schedule risk for the descent, transfer, and refueling elements of a potential human landing system. NASA's proposed plan is to transport astronauts in a human landing system that includes a transfer element for the journey from the lunar gateway to lower lunar orbit, a descent element to carry them to the surface, and an ascent element to return them to the gateway. So as I understand it, there's going to be a station around the moon called Gateway, and they're going to go dock there, and then from Gateway, they'll go down to the moon. Interesting. The agency also is looking at refueling capabilities to make these systems reusable. The total award amount for all 15 companies is $45.5 million. As Next Step is a public-private partnership program, companies are required to contribute at least 20% of the total project cost. The partnership will reduce cost to taxpayers and encourage early private investments in the lunar economy. So that's interesting, a lunar economy. And one thing I think that I remember is 100% clear, I think this is a fact. The moon has a lot of helium-3 in its surface, and helium-3 is just one step away from making helium-4, the most abundant isotope of helium, and I believe it's takes a lot less time than the other steps in the proton-proton cycle. So in the sun, for example, the protons come together, it could take a long time, like hundreds or thousands of years, or even hundreds and thousands of years. So it takes a long time. And there's four steps, and in the four steps, I think each next step takes less time. So I think getting from helium-3 to helium-4 and creating energy takes the least amount of time. So I believe the moon has lots of helium-3. So imagine making a gateway station up there and going to the moon back and forth, flying to Gateway, then when you're in Gateway, you'll descend down to the moon. So cool. The awardees from 8 states across the country are Aerojet Rocketdyne from California, one transfer vehicle study, Blue Origin in Kent, Washington, one descent element study, one transfer vehicle study, and one transfer vehicle prototype. Boeing in Houston, one descent element, two descent element prototypes, one transfer vehicle study, one transfer vehicle prototype, one refueling element study, and one refueling element prototype. You know what, there's a bunch of names here. I'm just gonna read one more because it's a place, believe it or not, in about 1986, I went to this place and I applied for a job. It's called Northrop Grumman Innovation Systems. Oh, this they have a branch in Dulles, Virginia, but at that time they also had a branch in Los Angeles. One descent element study, four descent element prototypes, one refueling element study, and one refueling element prototype. So there's a bunch of other things, and there's one, I'll just read one more, SpaceX in Hawthorne, California, one descent element study. So a lot of these places are in California, but they're strewn all across the U.S. So these are all companies that are going to build lunar modules and all this cool stuff for going to the moon. To expedite the work, NASA is invoking undefinitized contract actions, which allow the agency to authorize partners to start a portion of the work while negotiations towards contract award continue in parallel. So says Greg Chambers, a human landing system formulation manager at NASA's Marshall Space Flight Center in Huntsville, Alabama, and quote, "We're taking major steps to begin development as quickly as possible, invoking a next step option that allows our partners to begin work while we're still negotiating. We're keen to collect early industry feedback about our human landing system requirements, and the undefinitized contract action will help us do that," end quote. NASA gave industry its first head up in April with the issuance of a pre-solicitation of its intention to partner with American companies on the development of an integrated lander. The formal solicitation to be issued this summer will provide the requirements for a 2024 human landing and leave it to U.S. industry to propose innovative concepts, hardware development, and integration. So says Chavez again, and quote, "This new approach doesn't prescribe a specific design or a number of elements for the human landing system. NASA needs a system to get astronauts on the surface and return them home safely, and we're leaving a lot of specifics to our commercial partners," end quote. So that's so cool how NASA does all this. And we know we have citizen scientists that NASA can't possibly, and all the universities, they get all this data, they get photos, and they say, and they just tell citizen scientists, look, there's no way we can employ all the hundreds of people or tens of people to process these pictures. So NASA citizen scientist does it. And we all know one citizen scientist here in BC, he got a signal from a spacecraft that had been assumed and lost, but he picked up the signal. So citizen scientists do a lot. So I am very excited about this, going to the moon within the next 4 years, and all the technology, and hopefully that will get us to Mars. And you know what? We are a space-bearing race. We have been in space and for a long time, 50-year anniversaries now, for landing to the moon. Snoopy had its 50th now. The other 50th anniversary will come pretty soon. That's Apollo 11 and July 20th, 50th anniversary of Apollo 11 moon landing. So that is counting down. It's 57 days, 21 hours, 18 minutes, and as of now, 34 seconds. So about in 2 months' time, we're gonna have our 50th anniversary of actually a human being landing on a foreign body in the solar system. And hopefully that will bring us to Mars pretty soon. I mean, that would be just amazing to go to Mars. We got to get women to walk on the moon, women to walk on Mars, and there's a lot of women scientists do things. So thank you for listening. You know what? I would love to stay here for another hour because it's so exciting. NASA administrator to make Artemis moon program announcement media teleconference set. So thank you for listening. You know what? I am not sure if there's another show. I have to announce the other show. I'll do my best. Sorry about that. Next time, because no one comes in after this. So I am going to sign off now. And let's see. I have to get the system ready because when I press to auto DJ, sometimes it takes 5 seconds for it to go to Auto DJ. So thank you for listening. We talked about the moon today, and you know what? I've been so busy lately. I've been doing